You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702.
Family Matters.
All right, so let's now understand why some people ignore social distancing regulations and deliberately break lockdown regulations. And I was mentioning to Bongani earlier when I was throwing forward to the show that there are some people that are simply have no regard to the regulations. And there are people that deliberately break the regulations even when they know the possible consequences. And if you're one of those people, I'm not going to judge you. You can give us a call on 011-883-0702. Speak to us about why you decided to host a party, for instance. Why you decided to go visit your friend. Why you decided to travel across provinces and visit your family when you knew the consequences, when you knew what the law said. I want to bring into this conversation clinical psychologist Ruth Anser. Ruth, good morning.
Hi.
Thank you so much
good
for your
morning.
Time.
No, thank you. And welcome, Clement. I hope you have a wonderful time in this time slot.
Yeah, I did. So, thank you. Thank you, Ruth.
Yes.
Ruth, let's talk about the psychology and try and understand why some people ignore the regulations and deliberately break some of them in their day-to-day lives, knowing the consequences that they may be infected or they may infect other people. What's the psychology behind that?
So there are a myriad of reasons why people do so. And some of it is for, you know, not necessarily rebellious reasons. I think for some people, they might feel that they're really isolated or family members are really isolated, and there they decide to take a calculated risk. But I think what maybe is harder to understand and what we need to explore are those people who are more kind of blatantly doing it, not necessarily because, you know, they're concerned about, you know, the mental health of people who might be isolated. And I think, you know, it does vary from person to person. But essentially, a lot of the time, people, as a coping mechanism, they kind of go into denial.
Mm.
And they assume that, or they just pretend it's not as bad as it really is. Or they choose to, you know, they decide that actually there's a big conspiracy, that people are exaggerating. And I think that what contributes to this is the fact that a virus is invisible. So people aren't as responsive to threats that they can't see, such as a virus. You know, it could be different. With the Ebola virus, people were really, really sick, so there was no denying it. With a virus that we can't see, it can feel quite hypothetical. And so people don't seem to understand, they can't quite grasp how dangerous and how sinister it is. So for a lot of people, unless they've had an experience of someone around them being really sick or someone dying, they kind of can't quite grasp how bad it is. And I think that there's also the sense of, for some people, it's a sense of like bravado, where they think, well, I don't, you know, it's not going to affect me. There's also, we often have, you know, people are very bad at assessing risks, actually. And some people are very optimistic. I know there are people who are very anxious, but there is this tendency for us to assume that we're at, you know, more minimal risk than we really are. So we kind of have a sense that it won't happen to us. It happens to other people.
So I can throw a party and bring in 10, 20 people and it's not going to get to us.
Yes, and then people have this attitude of, well, if it gets to us, you know, I'm young and I'm healthy and, you know, everyone's going to get it. And I think that kind of attitude really sometimes can reveal an emotional immaturity, because we're not just talking about ourselves. You know, when you're wearing a safety belt, it's to make sure that you don't get hurt. But with this social distancing, it's not just about you not getting it. Because of the asymptomatic, some people are asymptomatic, and the way that it's transmitted, you keeping yourself safe and social distancing has also got a community focus in that you can keep other people safe. Mm. So for a lot of people, they do have the sense of, well, if it doesn't affect me or I'm prepared to take my chances, they don't quite realize the danger they're putting other people into. So sometimes it's quite an overt selfishness, a lack of empathy, and sometimes it's an ignorance.
Yeah. You know, Ruth, I'm just thinking also about some people that are using that as a coping mechanism. So they break the regulations, but that's because that's the best way to deal with the kind of anxieties and the depression that already exists brought by this pandemic and the lockdown. Because it makes sense that, you know, tending to others, even when it comes with risk, is a coping mechanism for some of those who are struggling during this pandemic, because that physical connection with others can boost your mental and physical health. And we're not saying this could be the justification you use, but this is something that already exists out there. We are wired to connect with other people. So
absolutely,
how do we look at that then? Is there other ways to even cope and connect with other people and be part of that community without them being there? I mean, how do you even move around that?
Well, I think, you know, the physical distancing is very taxing, and it does take away a very valuable part of our lives, which is relationships with other people, not necessarily only the people you live with. But I think until people realize that we're putting those people in danger, we need to, there has to be an acceptance and an understanding of how real this is, because then you'll be motivated to find other ways. And I know that, you know, being physically distant to people is really difficult. And there are people who've kind of met for picnics in a park and made sure they've sat, you know, quite far away. But generally, they're finding that when people are getting together, and especially we can see those large crowds in London when the pubs opened up a few nights ago, there was so much physical, people were crowded together, there were no masks. And there is this kind of sense of people feeling like that, you know, that it's gone away, and that as the regulations ease, it means that we're in less danger. So I think that there's a danger that when people get together, you know, you kind of get a sense of, well, everyone else is doing it, so it's normal. And it's much easier to push away feelings of vulnerability and anxiety.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get together and you kind of forget about it for a while, which is what you want to do. Mm. But we can't afford to. And I think that it's only when these people are going to start seeing either themselves get sick or people around them getting sick that they'll start to change their attitude.
I'm seeing
some...
Sorry, Ruth. I get what you mean there, because sometimes maybe it's the fact that, oh, I don't know anyone that's been affected by COVID-19 and
Absolutely.
Or someone who died from COVID-19. So it hasn't hit home yet. I'm seeing some SMSs here from some of our listeners. Masby has just sent me a WhatsApp a text message saying, Clement, other people break the rules because there are no consequences. There's no will for government through the police to enforce the rules. And Godfrey agrees with that, because in his SMS he says, in my view, we just have a tendency to break the law because there are no consequences. So unless there's a supervision in a form of a police or a municipality, unless they put a speed hump to prevent us from speeding, for instance, or build a wall for people not to cross the highway, South Africans and rules not on the same WhatsApp group. So again, that issue of consequences for their actions coming back, that if we're not seeing any consequences, then people are seemingly going to continue breaking the regulations.
But I think, Clement, what's so important is that we can't in the long term rely on external consequences. First of all, people rebel against them and find secret ways. And second of all, unfortunately, it opens up a whole new kind of opens up vulnerability to abuse from kind of, you know, police forces. And actually, long term, if people don't take responsibility in terms of their own behaviors, we cannot rely on an external force always, because it doesn't address what at the moment is causing the rebellion, which is people not realizing the impact. So to just have it enforced upon you, you're likely to get people who start protesting against that, this kind of sense of, you won't tell me what to do. So ultimately, we don't know how long this is going to be around for. We don't know how long it will be before there's a vaccine. So we have to have people changing their attitudes and starting to internalize what this really means, rather than pushing it away because it's so frightening. Because until we do that, we're not going to be able to change behavior. And I'm not kind of sure what kind of society we'll be living in if we are relying on kind of military force to separate. And I don't think realistically that can happen effectively long term. I don't think that's a real solution. We've got to look at what is it that is are making people not being able to realize that this is so, so very serious. And I think it's because we haven't seen anything like this before and we feel powerless and vulnerable. So for a lot of people, instead of taking steps to kind of strengthen themselves in terms of keeping themselves safe and other people, they kind of go into this, well, I want things to return to normal because that's where I felt safe.
Yeah,
and it's a desperate yearning for a sense of what we've all lost. And we have to be able to grieve for what we've lost rather than just try and hanker after it and then do things that we did before. Because whether we like it or not, we are living with, you know, this incredibly dangerous and scary virus that we still, you know, that we have to be as mature as possible.
Ruth, there are some listeners are engaging on this conversation. I'm getting some of the WhatsApp voice notes on 072-702-1702.
Hi there, it's Jenny G. One of my queries is, when does good sense prevail? What percentage of people who get COVID-19 actually get really sick? And obviously we know the death rate already because that's a given. But for the greater good of society, for the greater good of the economy, for the greater good of humankind, is this the right way to go?
So, yeah, is it the right way to go?
You know, in terms of, obviously I'm not a medical doctor, but in terms of the numbers that we're seeing, and they're saying about 20% of people who get the virus get it really badly, and at the moment there's a 2% fatality rate in terms of who we know is infected. Those are big numbers, and considering the fact that, you know, it's very easy to say, well, you know, things have to carry on and people die anyway. Not when it's a family member or not when it's your life that's at risk. And there are lots of things about the virus that we don't know the long-term impact. So I don't believe that we can be blasé and say, you know, we have to learn to live with it because, you know, how many people are going to die. From what we've seen in terms of the scale and the exponential spread, I don't believe that we can be complacent.
Yeah.
And while we have to find ways of coping economically, I don't think we must discount the absolute catastrophic effect of the sickness and what grief does and how, you know, and maybe it's until people have seen the impact of the loss or of the kind of very, you know, the deep impact of someone who's really ill and battling, will they realize how serious this is?
Yeah.
Lives are going to change for decades because of this illness and because of people that we are losing and going to lose.
Yeah. I'm interested, Ruth, in your thoughts on how the society has been responding to, say, some of the regulations and that trust deficit that seems to be existing between the citizens and government. Because, my goodness, government itself has admitted, even the president admitted, that some of the regulations actually were not rational, right?
Yes.
But he did say we're making mistakes and we're changing as we go. But there's an impact that has on society when we are looking at government making up regulations as they go. Some are being overzealous. That's actually how President Cyril Ramaphosa described some of the ministers who just make up these regulations as they go. Their tone is so condescending when they are holding these briefings. And for someone who's sitting at home and they're looking at all these scenarios and they think, I mean, why must I even bother to follow the regulations? How much of that is also a factor in people deciding to not adhere to the regulations?
I think that plays a big role. There is a loss of trust, and we did get a lot of mixed messages, and there were regulations that didn't seem to make sense, and there's still regulations that don't make sense. And I think the problem with that is that people then make decisions. I've heard so many people saying, well, if I can go to a religious service where there are 50 people, why can't I meet with my family members of 20 people and we'll just say a little prayer? What they're saying is, if that is allowed, why isn't disallowed, not recognizing that certain regulations have been passed for economic reasons, for political pressure reasons, not necessarily because it's safe. So what's really hard is that people look and go, well, if we can do this, then why can't we do that? Rather than saying, from what we do know, medically and scientifically, what, you know, in terms of keeping ourselves safe with wearing masks and physical distancing and sanitizing and cleaning, I think that we have to be able to separate out our resentment and mistrust in terms of regulations and what we've been told, and being able to say, well, this is what we know about the virus, and this is what we have to do to keep ourselves as safe as possible. Because if we're just going to respond from a position of rebellion and, well, that, you know, who are they to tell me what I can do, then our decisions are not going to be the kind of decisions that keep us or our loved ones safe. You know, the fact that it's asymptomatic means that you can be carrying it, not know, give it to someone else, who can then possibly die from it. And we cannot at the moment, our numbers, you know, certainly in Gauteng, but all over South Africa, our numbers are going, are getting higher and higher. And we're hearing that our hospitals are getting fuller and fuller. And this people can't keep saying this is an exaggeration. We have to listen to our, you know, healthcare professionals who are saying things are desperate. And so for all those people who are getting together, and I'm hearing stories and know people who are just feeling, because time is going on, that they've had enough, this kind of mental fatigue from corona, and they're getting together where it really does put them and other people at risk. For people who don't care about that, that's a specific issue, that's personality issues, that's a lack of empathy. But I think for other people, they are looking at their immediate need rather than long term. And while I do understand it is incredibly difficult and isolating not to see the people used to seeing, we've got to realize that we have to only see them in ways that keep us safe. And the risks are really, really high to be ignoring them. And so we do have, and if there are people around you, or if you're somebody who's feeling that, you know, you just, that this doesn't make sense and you don't know anyone who's sick and you're tempted to go, really look at what it is that is making you risk something for you and your loved ones or for other people's loved ones that is making you feel, because I think that because, again, we can't see it. And also a lot of the things that we've taken for granted, you know, for the last, I don't know, 30, 40, however old people are, going out and seeing friends has been considered normal. It's never been dangerous. And suddenly they're being told this is dangerous. And I think it's really hard for people to, some people to acknowledge that.
Oh, Ruth, thank you so much for your time. Really, this has been so helpful, understanding the psychology behind, you know, people that are simply breaking these regulations, understanding well the consequences for their actions. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you so much for having me. It was lovely to chat to you.
Yeah, Ruth Ansah is a clinical psychologist.